All right, back at it here on The Fan. It is Jonathan Peterlin here with you guys, and I'm with you for the rest of the way solo. So if you want to get involved, 216-474-0092 is how you get involved. But I thought it was fascinating talking with Chris Jimenez there because, yes, Chris works for Guardians TV. He's going to have a shinier picture than most. I don't know that I would have gone so far as giving the front office credit in this situation, but I do find it interesting that they knew something was up and then decided to still play Emmanuel Clase and still go down that road. Now, obviously, baseball stepped in and it was what it was. I don't know how much credit you want to give them for not trading a guy. I think it's a classy move, but if you traded him and then were left holding the bag, isn't the obvious conclusion there that if another team was left holding the bag, that they would just never do dealing with you ever again? Or they just never would make a trade with you? That seems to be the obvious next step there. So it never would have benefited Antonetti or Chernoff. It would have pissed off a lot of people in the process, and ultimately it wouldn't have made any sense. But that layer to it might be what ends up costing Antonetti and Chernoff their job when this is all said and done. What I mean by that is Emmanuel Clase was awesome leading up into this. There's no denying it. He had logged a 1.10 ERA since May 1st. The man had been getting the job done. But what they had to weigh in their minds and what they had to weigh out, do we pitch Clase when we need him the most? We're in a division battle. We're in a wild card battle. Call it whatever you want. We're in a battle for the playoffs this little stretch here. We need to win as many games as we can to decide if we're going to be a fire sailing team or a team that goes ahead and makes a move to acquire better assets and actually compete with guys, acquire guys that can help this year. So they had to decide what they wanted to do and who they wanted to be. And over the weekend, they played Clase a ton. He kept going out there. He kept pitching. And so the part that I find fascinating is, and this goes to Stephen Vogt the same way because I saw quotes from him as well. They had to weigh out how much ignorance they could have in this whole entire ordeal versus what the actual outcome was going to end up being. They knew something wasn't on the up and up. They knew something wasn't right, as evidenced by the idea that they weren't going to go ahead and just trade Emmanuel Clase. Because if they didn't know anything, then they could have traded him a week ago, gotten the best value for him, and it was what it was. They didn't. They knew something was up. They knew he was all of a sudden untouchable. And if you want to go back as far as some of the Ken Rosenthal reports and some of the other reports we've had over the previous couple weeks, you can make an argument they've known for a little bit here. What they ended up doing is fascinating, though, because it shows a sense of we're going to try to win as many games as we can, and we'll wait for baseball to dole out the punishments while knowing that something was coming. It just feels like you're a little bit misled. It feels like you're a little bit just kind of not being told 100% the truth, but we got here. And so I brought up Clase logging the 1.10 ERA. I did that twice now since May 1st. And what I think is interesting about that is that if you put it with Ortiz, who in his last seven starts before being popped had pitched 39 innings, had a 2.77 ERA, 1.30 whip, had basically been awesome throughout that stretch, is that this is the type of gambling that if the Guardians knew something was going on, it clearly didn't impact whether or not they wanted to throw Emmanuel Clase or Ortiz into the mix. That is the part that I find to be wildly fascinating out of the whole ordeal. Because it almost falls in the bucket of what Pete Rose eventually got caught for, which was gambling, but gambling on his own team. We don't look as hard on that. We don't look as hard when we feel like you're rooting for the squad. But if the Guardians believed in Clase enough to throw him out in three games from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday because they believed that he could impact the game in a positive way, whether he was intentionally throwing ball ones to start off the inning or not, it's an interesting footnote to the whole discussion. And I do think it's something that baseball's got to look at when they ultimately come down with the punishment. Now, this is the first instances of this type of prop bet happening, okay? We've had other situations before, and we've had other players that have been banned for life, right? Like Tucapita Marcano, the San Diego Padres infielder that was banned for life for betting on his own team. You bet on your own team. You can't do that in baseball. It's done. The league suspended four other players for a year for betting on baseball. In those instances, it was all on just outcomes, right? MLB umpire Pat Hoberg fired earlier this year after it was learned that he shared sports betting accounts with a friend who bet on baseball games. But these are all betting on baseball games, right? Like the A's pitcher, Michael Kelly. June 4th of last year, he gets popped for betting just under $100 on baseball. The bets were made back when he was playing in the minor leagues. He was betting on outcomes of games. You know, we've seen Calvin Ridley. We've seen Jameson Williams, who got six games reduced to four. Jameson was betting on college football games a little bit differently. Calvin Ridley betting on games. Jonte Porter, banned for life. That goes into the prop bet territory that we're talking about. But as far as baseball is concerned, and the majority of these betting situations and scandals that we've talked about, they've all been under the guise of, we're betting on the games. And I think that's an important footnote in all of this. Even with the Jonte Porter part that's different, Jonte Porter betting on individual prop lines is much different than the impact that Class A and Ortiz had. Now, I don't want to sound like I'm defending him. And I want your input, 216-474-0092. How high to the top should this go, and what should baseball do about this? I don't want to make it seem like I'm defending him, because I'm not. Baseball's got a rule with an iron fist when it comes to any sort of betting. That's just how this works. They're not going to have a choice or an excuse or an out. But when we talk about Ortiz and Class A and how many more people this might actually extend out to, I think it's interesting that we talk about it in the proper context. This isn't gambling to me. Like I joked earlier with G. Bush, I got a buddy of mine who always says, I don't go gambling, I go winning. When you're gambling on outcomes of games, that's gambling. What Class A and what Ortiz was doing, that's not gambling to me. That is understanding I'm going to throw a ball, I'm not going to impact the game in any sort of meaningful way, and I'm going to cash my checks. And I think that's the difference here. It doesn't mean baseball is going to go any more lenient on them. You bet on the game, whether it's a prop bet or whether it's not. Now, the stupid part about all this is that they weren't aware enough to understand that you can't bet on baseball in any sort of capacity. You just can't. You're going to end up like the Alabama baseball coach, that if you bet any sort of amount, the Alabama baseball coach, I think it was like $100,000 that he ended up gambling in order to try to win just a game where he rigged the starting pitcher and who was going to be able to play in that game. Like, all right, you tanked a game. It's not great. You obviously got punished for it, as you should. But the end result was that the only reason why people paid attention was because it was worth $100,000 to Vegas' pocket. I wonder if we're going to have this same type of situation here, where the only reason why baseball caught on is because it wasn't that it was done in three different states, in New Jersey, Ohio, and New York, like first reported with Ortiz. They get caught because it's $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 for these players on one-pitch outcomes. It's too much money on a one-pitch outcome. That's how it gets flagged. Now, again, you got to make it worth your while, right? That's the whole point of all this. You know, I could bet until I would bet you guys in a gambling segment and why you probably shouldn't be gambling, I'm going to make a wager with you guys, and I understand the irony there. I would bet that Ortiz and Class A could make $100 bets on one-pitch outcomes as often as they wanted in the regular season, and nobody would bat an eye. Nobody would even think twice about it, because there's enough degenerates out there that have gotten enough money out there that have also done enough stupid things when they're down and out that they have gambled $100 on a first-pitch ball or strike in the top of the third inning. And I know you guys out there are like, I don't believe you. Trust me, it's happened. Not to me personally, although I've made some pretty stupid bets when down and out. So I will file myself in the category. Man, I one time, unless I don't gamble nearly as much anymore. I just don't. I've realized I just don't win at those things. That's a lot I have in life right now. I'm a pretty good football gambler. Outside of that, you're just rolling the dice is all you're doing. It's all a luck-based thing. I think there's something with football that you can actually figure out. But with baseball, it's too hard. There's too many games, too many variances. It is what it is. But when I've been down and out before, I have bet on Korean baseball games. It's on the app. It's 12 o'clock at night. I'm done gambling for the day, but I want to stay gambling, right? Like we do dumb things. How many of you guys out there will bet on preseason football in the Hall of Fame game on Thursday? Like, yeah, you bet on dumb things. There's enough people out there that will throw $50, $100 on a sporting event at whatever time of the night just because, in their eyes, it's a coin flip venture. Ball or strike, top of the third inning, in game 127 for the Guardians is basically betting heads or tails on a coin. That's all it's doing for people. And so there's enough people out there that will do it. The problem that arises for the Guardians and these Guardians players in Ortiz and Clase, they started dancing with the devil. They got greedy. Greed is the downfall of everyone in life. But they got greedy, and when you get greedy Williams on people, you see what happens. That's how you end up getting caught. Who was the head of the snake, though? We're all assuming Ortiz because he was busted first, but maybe he wasn't, and maybe it goes deeper than just two players. Like, I can't believe nobody stopped to think that they can't play such large wagers on this. It seems impossible, like driving through a car wash and not getting wet, but here we are. Clearly enough of them thought that. But how infested in this locker room does this problem get? Because I would be shocked if this started and ended with Ortiz and Class A, and these were the only two that were working in conjunction with themselves. It would be incredibly fascinating to me to find out what Major League Baseball would do if it turned out there was like 7, 8, or 9 guys on the Guardians, and this was a real problem where they all thought they could get away with it, and turns out they can't. We have like a whole new pitching staff next year because everyone just gets banned from baseball because of this situation. I got another theory on this, but I want to get to your phone calls. 216-474-0092. Don in Cleveland up next. What's up, Don?
How you doing today?
Hey, man. How are you?
Thanks for taking my call.
Good. Yeah, thanks for making it. Go ahead.
I got a couple of comments. I've got motive, and I have to disagree with you. I don't know if you're being facetious when you say it's not gambling. I think this is 50 million times worse than what Pete Rose did, because he is out having an outcome in the game. He's throwing a ball. You only get to throw four balls.
So I'll let you finish, but like, so I am being a little facetious and just kind of doing like it's not gambling, it's winning thing. But like in my mind, yes, obviously it's gambling. You're placing a wager and people are placing wagers for you. It has to be treated as such. But also in the same vein, and this is kind of what I'm getting at, it's not gambling with the idea that I could lose. You know, that's kind of what I'm getting at.
I get that part.
It's a rigged dice, if anything, and it's rigged in their favor. So that's where I look at it a little bit differently, where there's not like them sitting on edge being like, is this going to come through? Is this not going to come through?
Gotcha.
No, it's coming through. So, they got it.
So the thing is, you're saying it's the first pitch of an inning. It doesn't affect the outcome of the game, but it can absolutely affect it, because now he has to throw other pitches to get the guy out. And he's really, really good, except for last postseason, which raised another question. What was going on last postseason?
So,
right?
But isn't that fascinating to you? I don't think the postseason thing last year was any sort of indication of anything. Only because I watched his Instagram lives where he basically cried. Okay, Yeah. So I do think it's interesting that Ortiz, when he left and when he got this slapped down, had an ERA under 3 and legitimately had been the best pitcher the Guardians had for the previous 2 months. And then Class A, since May 1st on, had a 1.10 ERA. Like, you can tell me it impacted the games, and I'll hear that and I'll listen to it, but these were two of your best pitchers since May 1st on.
So I have some motive.
All right, what's the motive?
What's the easiest way to give your friends tens of thousands of dollars? You got to put it in a bag and put it in the back of their car. You can't write them a check. The IRS sees all that stuff, just like these gambling sites see the wagers. Red flags, red flags. What's the easiest way to give your family and friends in a third world country, because they are from one of the poorest countries in the world, what's the easiest way to get them money? Hey, I'm going to make a pitch tonight. Bet all sorts of money on that pitch.
Yeah, no, I could easily see that. And Don, I appreciate you. The part of this that makes it so dumb for these guys is they're costing themselves potentially millions to go ahead and do what you're suggesting and just helping out a buddy. That's why the theory I had earlier, and I really am starting to believe this, is that, and so I explained earlier I worked in restaurants in college, right? And one of the things was that who steals from restaurants? It's like the only people that got caught stealing from restaurants in any scenario, I had a boss teach me this one time, were people that thought they weren't making enough money. The people that thought they weren't being paid the right amount of wages. And it's like, well, who in this scenario would think that they're not being paid accordingly, not being paid the right amount of money, and there go, they feel as if they're almost entitled to do this to baseball, and it'd be Ortiz, who's on a rookie contract, which rookie contracts in baseball are criminally underpaid, and then Emmanuel Clase, who looks at Edwin Diaz making $20 million a year for the Mets, looks at Josh Hader making $19 million a year for the Astros, and thinks, man, am I underpaid in this equation. I'm making $6 million next year, and that's with a pay bump. They gave me the same contract that they gave Miles Straw. I want to hear from you guys on this, though. 216-474-0092. A couple of you guys hanging. If you're hanging, hang tight. We'll get you on the other side. How far does this Class A situation go? And I have a Shador Sanders theory related to Stefanski I want to pass by you guys as well. It's Jonathan Pino and Afternoon Drive right here on The Fan. We'll get to, in case we missed it, coming up in just a little bit as well. We'll get back to your phone calls also. But you can listen to The Fan anytime, anywhere on the free Odyssey app or by telling your smart speaker to play 92.3 The Fan. And now you can find The Fan on YouTube. Subscribe to our channel. Watch all the best content from your favorite shows on The Fan each and every weekday. Yeah, so I just find it fascinating and interesting in many different ways what's going on with the gambling, but it is okay when you get hit by a truck to say, I got hit by a truck. And that's what's happening here with the Guardians, and really the past 24 hours or so. It's all right as a Guardians fan to say, this stinks, this is not something that we ever saw coming, and it also might end up tanking our season. Because without Clase and without Ortiz, you have taken out what was, for a two-month stretch, the best pitcher on the team and what has been one of the best closers in all of baseball, and since May 1st had been a 1.10 ERA. He had been absolutely sensational. And I think the context of all this matters into what the Guardians end up doing at the deadline, but I do think it gives you that outlet if, as a Guardians fan, you want to realize and put together, hey, these things happened, but how far do you want to take it? I wouldn't be surprised if more and more Guardians fans want to start calling for Antonetti and Chernoff to go ahead and have their jobs removed. I started doing that a month ago, and the reason why I started doing that is I just think they've been in the job too long. I subscribe to that theory that after 10 years in any company, it's a Theo Epstein-run theory, but in any company after 10 years, your message is running stale, you're not doing things the same way, and it's not getting through the same way that it used to. And I do feel like we've hit that point with Antonetti and Chernoff. Do I respect what they do? Yes, I do. Do they bother the living daylights out of me when it comes to calling up players? Of course. But I look at this the same way that many people look at the Quinshon Judkins situation here with the Browns. It's pretty simple. Should Andrew Berry be held responsible for Quinshon Judkins ending up with a domestic violence, alleged domestic violence arrest? Well, it happened under his watch. It sounds unfair, right? Quinshon never had any other priors and any other stop. I mean, at some point, Andrew Berry can't be, he's not a magic eight ball. He can't see what's coming ahead of time. He can't give any predictive analysis that way. If the guy's got no track record, well, how am I supposed to punish him, right? But just like a Fortune 500 CEO, if it happens under your watch, it happens under your watch. You know, yes, I do think it's a product of being the Guardians and it being the Guardians where you don't pay your players as much as to why someone like Emmanuel Clase and Ortiz, who's still on his, you know, rookie contract in baseball, would think to themselves, yeah, maybe I can get a couple more dollars here and there. Someone like Emmanuel Clase, who thinks he should be making $20 million a year, probably does think to himself, yeah, they're cheating me out every single season, and the reason why they're cheating me out is pretty obvious. They gave me Miles Straw's contract when I deserved something much better than that, but they knew that I was from a country that didn't have, that I was from a not great country as far as resources are concerned in this discussion. And they gave me a pennies on the dollar deal, and I took it because I wanted generational wealth. It's not the first time the Guardians have done that type of move. They've always been in on getting some of the Latin-born players into the, hey, we'll give you 40 cents of the dollar, 30 cents of the dollar, but you'll never have to think about money again deal. Okay. Hey, some people take it, some people don't. Yeah, it's a thing. We've seen countless articles about the Guardians doing that practice, but then you can't turn around and wonder why someone like Emmanuel Clase would do such a thing when he feels like he's being cheated financially. That's all. It's not much deeper than that. It's just a theory I have. Maybe Emmanuel Clase is just a greedy person and wanted as much money as he possibly could and thought this was the scheme to get there. I don't know. I doubt it. I would bet he probably felt like he wasn't compensated to the point that he should be, and that's probably where he was trying to get every last hour. I would tell him it's stupid. I would tell him, you would tell him, it's about as dumb of a thing as you can do. But, you know, he'll have to live with the repercussions of that now. I want to know how deep this goes. I want to know your thoughts, though. 216-474-0092. Tom in Solon up next on The Fan. What's up, Tom?
How are you doing? Good?
Hey, Tom. I'm good. How's it going today?
Oh, good. Solon's nice and hot, so you know when you go home.
Yeah, I'm ready for it. I mowed my lawn yesterday, so I'm okay now. But I sweated more than I think I've ever sweated in my life out there.
Oh yeah, I gave up this year. I'm paying somebody. I'm too tired and too old, and too persistently bothered by the Browns and the Indians.
That's okay.
To worry about. But here's, I think your theory is sound. I don't think that these are the only two players on the Indians that are doing such things. And our Guardians, I'm sorry. And it kind of makes sense to me because with that guy crying in the end because he pitched bad, I think he was probably very disenchanted with himself that he wasn't as good as he thought to pull it off after giving up what he gave up. And that happens a lot. And the other thing is, you know, Sanders, was you talking about?
Yeah.
I don't get that at all. I mean, if the kid is, I know that's how Stefanski's going to have to save his job, by making one of these two young quarterbacks better than they are. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean it's the right thing to do to that kid. It might leave a permanent mark on him that he never recovers. Why give somebody a complex if they don't need it?
Okay. Good point. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate you. And I want to hear from you guys. 216-474-0092. Yeah, I just don't believe that it's the only two there. And this is not Hector Gomez reports or anything like this. It's you. Ask Jonathan Peterlin what he thinks, okay? Ask me what I think. I hate third person. Ask me what I think and whether these are the only two rogue players to go ahead and do this. And I just have a hard time thinking that's the case. We'll find out. Maybe we won't. I would hope we'd find out if anybody else was actually in on the business that seems like this is a little syndicate that they were trying to run here involving three different states and involving all sorts of money. I'd hope we'd find out. But, like, I just common sense. Have it speak to you right now. Do you feel like in a team of 26 players on the roster, you have a 40-man roster in general, but 26 players in any given baseball day, and a whole pitching staff, 13, sometimes 14 players on the pitching staff, do you feel like only Ortiz and Clase were the ones involved in this? Like, probably, there's probably more. There's probably a name or two that we don't know of yet that will come out. Maybe it never will. But again, I just, common sense tells me that if multiple people were able to think this was a good idea, then it was probably the common theme throughout the clubhouse. I mean, I just think that's a life thing in general. And it might sound incredibly stupid if you take just a couple steps back, but the moment one of them, and I don't know which one was the head of the snake, but the moment one of them started cashing $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 wins and helping out their buddies or just helping out their pocketbook, whatever it is, by throwing a meaningless ball one to start off a third inning, then the others probably thought it was a good idea too. They just didn't take enough of a big picture view about how much money they're potentially costing themselves and just how serious of a problem this is and how serious baseball takes this. Lewis and Shaker, what's up, man?
Oh, JP, I don't even know where to start, man. I mean, it's an addiction, man. Everybody knows it's an addiction, man. And JP, I'm going to be honest with you, man. There's a reason why I bet on horse racing five times a year, because I used to be addicted, man. I lost my job betting on horse racing, man, and I had to get it under control. So that's why, you know, when the Triple Crown comes around and the Breeders' Cup, I tell my girlfriend,
oh, you
I'm
see,
going
now,
to bet it.
Lewis, now I'm going to feel bad every time I talk to you for horse tips. I'm going to be like, no, am I feeding the addiction that cost you your job, man? Because you know I love the ponies. You know I love the ponies, Lewis. You know
I know, JP. I know
you want to. I don't want to be that enabler for you now. I don't want to be that guy for you.
JP, don't worry. Like I said, I only bet five times a year. Other than that, there's a big horse race coming up this weekend. I'm going to look at it, but I'm not going to bet it. And you know, as far as, you know, Clase and them, it's an addiction, man. It's an easy way. Every addict.
Yeah, but I don't think it is. I don't think it is in this instance, though. I really don't. Only because in my opinion, so you know it because you're a horse racing gambler, and so you know, like, when you make a, even though you've done all the research on it and you figured everything out, hell, you probably could have had tips from the stalls trying to figure out what exactly is going on, but that horse mm-hmm. still has to run that race, and you still have to finish that exactly. thing out, and you're sweating it. You're still sweaty. You got a tip or a time or two. And I listen, I lived at Hawthorne Racetrack as a teenager, okay? There's enough times I got tips on certain things where I'm like, I feel really right. good that I know how this outcome is going to go. But you still sweat it out because there still is a gambling element to it. The part of that escapes me from this being gambling, and they'll get punished like it's gambling, okay? But the part that escapes me is that this wasn't a bet as to whether or not they would be able to throw a ball or a strike. Like they were going to be able to throw the ball. Like they were winning this bet. There was no part of this that was them sweating it out.
Exactly. It's gambling, something that you have control over, and you can make an easy buck real quick.
Yeah, I mean, this would be like me gambling right now if I'm gonna make it to 7 o'clock. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna. I'm here. I'm doing the show. It's not like nothing else is happening but me doing this show until 7 o'clock today.
Okay, so and what if you don't make it? What if you I'd have to
pass out and die, okay? Maybe the better way of doing this would be, am I betting on me standing up from the chair when the break is done? It's like, I got full control over that. It's not a bet anymore when it comes to that.
I see your point, but it's...
I'm betting with suckers, if you want to call it a bet, I'm betting with the sucker at the poker table is what I'm doing there. Like, I'm just betting with idiots. Like, if Jake Murren next to me, Lewis, wanted to be like, hey, I'll take that action that you won't stand up when the segment ends. Like, sure. But you know what? I look at Jake Murren in that instance, and he's a smart guy, but I'm like, you're just an idiot. I'm sorry. Like, you're dumb. You're going to lose that bet. That's how Ortiz and Class A looked at this. I just throw a ball to start off the first inning. There's no chance they're throwing a strike. Like, that's as easy of a win as me standing up from this chair.
So if you have that much control over what you're done. They done, man. They done.
I think they will be because baseball looks so poorly on this.
And yesterday we were immediately affected. We had a 2-run lead in the ninth inning or something like that, and blew it.
And then in came Cade Smith, who had been pretty good, but just absolutely bad last night. All right, Lewis, I appreciate you, man.
All right, my good man.
All right, good stuff. Sean in Houston, let's squeeze you in here. What's up, Sean?
Look, is there any way that these guys were like blackmailed into this, or I mean, is there even hope of that with all the, I mean, like, you got these guys having to pay back, you know, people from when they're in high school, college. Obviously these guys have been in the pros for a couple years, but these aren't vets, right? So is there any way that they were like, hey, like, you need to do this because we got something on you? And then the other thing is, like, they just didn't screw us for this year, man. If they're out, that's our farm system. Not in totality, but you're missing 2 to 3 top 10 guys in a farm system from these guys doing that. And it's, I mean, you don't come back from, like, not even 3 misses, but 3 non-picks. They're just gone in a trade.
Yeah, it's going to be really hard because, I mean, think about it. If you trade brutal. Class A, if you paired him with Kwan, for instance, you know the haul that the Dodgers would have given for a Class A Kwan haul? I mean, it would have been unreal.
I mean, it's just, I mean, it
or just even a Class A haul in general. I mean, my goodness.
I mean, Philly, Dodgers, man, I mean, there were people that we could have just been like, guys, I know we got rid of them, but let's see what we're going to do. Now I'm ready to pay attention again because they're coming up soon. Somebody, right? And then the other part is, I mean, come on, MLB. I know you hear us, Rob, but just it was the first pitch. It wasn't like they were losing the game. Like, be a little gentle if you're out there. Maybe we can bribe Bryce to go talk to him with the bat again, you know? But all right, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate you, man. Yeah, I think we all know how that's going. They have to make an example out of these guys. They have to. You know that. I know that. There's no leniency. Maybe down the road, like 20 years from now, if this happened, there'd be some leniency, and it'd be like a year suspension or something. But it just – that baseball can't be lenient when it comes to gambling. They never have been, and they certainly can't be now, and especially as it's infiltrated the prop bet world. As always, you can listen to this show and all of our local shows in The Fan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Take The Fan with you wherever you go. Listen to us on the Odyssey, iHeartRadio, or TuneIn apps. In case we missed it, next, as I stand up and take my money from Jake Murren right here on The Fan.